All right, Tuesday night, and we are live. Hope everybody's doing good. As always, be blessed in Jesus' mighty name. Just two things off of the pregame. Okay, so basically over the last at least 2 years of the Biden administration, we had the Houthis attacking all sorts of vessels in the Red Sea, Mediterranean, all those different seas over there, attacking all of these different vessels, sinking some, bombing others. And what was done? Absolutely freaking nothing. I mean, nothing. We were actually losing to the Houthis. You heard me talk about it. And you're like, Tom, that's a little hyperbolic, losing to the Houthis. Well, if you don't actually fight back, that's losing. I mean, I don't care what Switzerland says. If you don't fight back, you are losing. We weren't fighting back. Ships were being sunk, damaged, and everything else by the Houthis. And nobody, an Iranian-backed terrorist group out of Yemen, nothing was done. So in 100 days, I think we're up to 105, 106 days, whatever it is now. So in 100 days, Trump just ends it. 2+ years of Biden doing absolutely nothing. Which brings me to my other point. That little CNN panel where you had the, she's real popular now, but I haven't gotten her name down yet, but the conservative woman on there, she's talking about how Donald Trump released 5,000 black men out of prison. And the liberal, one of the liberal leftist pundits says, well, as a black man, well, I just have a question for you. As a black man, what have you ever freaking done? Not a thing. Trump released 5,000 nonviolent black men out of federal penitentiaries, 5,000 of them. And what in this guy, he looks at her with this condescending air the entire time. Oh, how dare you as a white Jewish woman talk about black men? Well, you do absolutely nothing for your own race. You do nothing at all. What has he ever done? Nothing. Donald Trump meets with Kim Kardashian, anything but a political ally, and releases another and maybe others. I know specifically there's one mother. Yeah, Aaron, find her name. Yeah, there it is. Batya Ungar Sagan. Look, yeah, perfect. There, Darren, you're the man. So, there, I mean, look at that look on his face. What has this guy ever done? It is absolutely prototypical of the Democratic Party. They do absolutely nothing except make things worse and pay themselves to do so via NGOs. Look at that look on his face. He's never done a thing to release one black man out of prison. He makes money off of the racial grift, but he does nothing to actually do that which he espouses. He's always talking about abuses. He's talking about white cops. He's talking about black men being arrested and when they shouldn't be, or whatever it may be. Talking about police abuse, black men being arrested in disproportionate amounts, which is all lies. 13% of the population committing 56% of violent crime. That's what he just talks his entire life and makes money off of Democratic Party NGOs while he does it. That's it. He does nothing. Donald Trump releases 5,000 black men. That was his first term. Out of prison. And this guy just sits there. They're just such disgusting human beings. Yes, there are disgusting rhinos. I fully admit it. I can't stand rhinos more than these guys, because rhinos are like little moles, little spies, you know, little backbiters, little Benedict Arnolds. Okay, this guy at least acknowledges who he is, unlike Mike Pence, people like that, Mitt Romney and others. But anyway, I just marvel at the attitude. Let me say hey to everybody in the chat real quick here. Buckeye Nut 1968 is on. Drummer for Jesus is on. Skunk 71 is on. Dave Souders is on. Richard Perry 49 is on. Leon Fish Puppy's on. General Plowman is on. Black Bar 201 is on. Praise Holler is on. Key Lime 13's on. Todd Stuff is on. Jules 21 Hours is on. Buckeye Nut 1968, I got that one already, is on. Welcome again, Buckeye Nut. Let's see here. Paul's NYC is on. Judy Anita is on. Scooter 8887 is on. D9597 is on. Robin Aroni is on. Big Jim Go Blue is on. Bill F1 is on. Todd Suff is on. Lord Gene Lynn is on. Hassle Free TV is on. Leon Fish Puppy's on. Guitar Glenn is on. LA 106 Times is on. DK Jackson is on. Jim Brody's on. Milwaukee James is on. PP Potter is on. Mike Griffith is on. Guitar Glenn is on. Sheila K is on. Love you guys. Appreciate each and every one of you. Now, before we get to anything national, I've got my giant Trump pile. Of course, lots of stuff happening with the Trump administration, as always, because the man only sleeps 3 hours a night and gets a lot of things done. Gotten more things done in 100 days than his presidency and the Obama, than Biden and Obama's presidencies combined. And all they did was negative things, so we didn't want them to get anything done anyway. But I want to go to Cincinnati. I've just got to cover this because, and for some of you might be thinking the reason why you're going to cover this is because you're an ex-cop. That's correct. Just so you know, this absolutely blows my mind what's happening here. First of all, just put that side by side, Ken, Aaron. This is Paul Ace to pull a video. I just want you to see the picture. This is Rodney Hinton, who drove over and murdered a police officer in Cincinnati. Now, first things first on this, how can this guy be a father of an 18-year-old? He looks 18. He's the father of an 18-year-old, which is strike one in this situation, because when did he actually have this child, 18-year-old? Look how young that guy is. But anyway, I digress for just a moment. But that is actually, for me, part of the story. All right, so Paul Ace pulled a video. Ohio thug right here, Rodney Hinton, used his car to take the life of a deputy. The thug's 18-year-old son, Ryan Hinton, had recently passed away as a result of stealing a car, then pointing his gun at police who opened fire and shot him, and he later died at the hospital. This guy, for vengeance sake, went and found a random deputy who had nothing to do. As a matter of fact, one of our assistant producers here, Brent, actually has a relative who knows that deputy got run over because he's from Cincinnati. This is a guy who had already retired, come back just as like a auxiliary sort of deputy, and was there just running a traffic light. The guy had already put in all his time, and he got killed by this guy. Had nothing to do with his son at all, but he goes and just runs him over and kills him. All right, so Paul Ace to pull the video. Here's the news report. Play it for me.
The father of an 18-year-old killed in an officer-involved shooting on Thursday. A suspect charged with aggravated murder. Here's ABC's Christian Cordero.
Tonight, authorities say the shooting of an 18-year-old captured on police body cam is connected to the death of an Ohio deputy after that teen's father allegedly hit him with a car a day later. Prosecutors say the attack was calculated and premeditated. Cincinnati PD responding to reports of a stolen Kia at an apartment building Thursday morning. Four suspects then fleeing police, among them 18-year-old Ryan Hinton. Body camera shows Hinton fall as he tries to run away. Police say they heard a metal clinking sound they believe was a gun. As Hinton emerges from behind a dumpster, authorities say another officer firing four or five shots.
The officer says that he saw the suspect point the firearm at him.
Yes.
Just 6 seconds passed between when police arrived and gunshots rang out. Officials say they tried administering medical aid. Hinton was struck twice and died. Investigators saying this gun was recovered from the scene allegedly found in Hinton's possession. On Friday, a day after that shooting and 2 hours after the Hinton family reviewed the body camera footage, according to the family's lawyer, a driver crashing a car into a Hamilton County deputy directing traffic near a commencement ceremony, killing him. The suspect, authorities say, is Ryan Hinton's father, Rodney Hinton Jr. Hinton's attorney calling the officer's death a horrific tragedy. At his first court appearance today, Hinton walked through a room packed with law enforcement. He's now charged with aggravated murder.
With the Hamilton County Sheriff says the deputy's death was a tremendous loss. Hinton Jr. is currently being held on no bail. His bond hearing scheduled for Tuesday.
All right, so there you go. Now we're going to look at the body cam footage. The body cam footage on the news report is absolutely horrendous. There's no need for that because it's actually perfect. We have it. But anyway, everybody has. It's not like we did anything to get it, but we have it. But anyway, so after the family views the video of the shooting, which you're going to see here in just a second. We'll talk about it more in a minute, which is indisputable. what's happening with this? I shouldn't talk about this yet until we all see the video, but I'll just set it up for just a second. What's happening now is that black people feel like they have the right to execute white people. That's just it. And I know nobody else will say that. Alex Jones might say it, a few other people maybe, because now through CRT, through DEI, through the Biden administration, through Barack and Mike Obama, they have been taught that everybody who is white deserves to be executed because they're members of the Ku Klux Klan or they're Adolf Hitler. So, and that's what they use to justify the persecution via prosecution of Donald Trump. Well, it doesn't matter what you do to him, even though you're accusing him of crimes that A, don't exist, and B, even if they did, he didn't do. It doesn't matter because he's Hitler. Wouldn't you do anything to stop Hitler? So now, no matter what happens, white people are guilty of persecuting black people. And none of us ever have. Yeah, I mean, there might be some remnants of that, but nobody ever has. Am I saying there's no racism? Yeah, there's racism in white people and black people and Hispanic people and Asian people. You can find racism anywhere and everywhere. But now the assumption by the black community is, and I'm not speaking about all black people, just certain portions of it, percentages of it, because when you're talking about human beings, it's always about percentages. But a certain percentage of the black community now believes that it's perfectly fine to execute, and I mean literally execute justice, what they deem to be justice, on white people because all white people are white supremacists out to kill black people. When you get told, first of all, Rodney King is a hero, a man who held a knife to his wife's pregnant belly, died of a fentanyl overdose, and then they falsely accused Derek Chauvin of strangulating him, even though he had 95% oxygenation rate at the point of death, which makes it impossible for him to be asphyxiated. So why is Derek Chauvin in prison at all? Because in order for Derek Chauvin to have killed George Floyd, it would have had to be asphyxiation, but he wasn't asphyxiated. He had three times, what'd I say? Rodney King? Yeah. I meant George Floyd.
Yeah.
George Floyd. But so anyway, okay, now you're throwing me all off now, but it's not your fault. You need to make that correction. But anyway, so you have Derek Chauvin languishing in prison for 22 years for doing absolutely nothing. And what, you know, why not? Because he's a white supremacist terrorist. Out to kill black people, even though George Floyd never died of asphyxiation. He died of a fentanyl overdose. He had three times the lethal amount in his bloodstream. So, but now it's just been legitimized. So this father, even after seeing the body cam footage that you're about to see, which completely exonerates the police, shows his son with a gun in his hand. And by the way, he still committed a carjacking. You know, his son never been shot. Guess what, Aaron? His son never been shot if he never committed a carjacking right. to begin with. But yet his dad still feels justified right. because somehow or another, if it's a white guy that killed his son, it's unjustified no matter what his son did. All right, so here's the body cam footage. This comes from police.law.news, Cincinnati, Ohio. Stolen car in a parking lot. Stole a car in a parking lot. This is what the suspect Ryan Hinton did. Police arrived and four suspects ran. One of the suspects, Ryan Hinton, was armed with a gun and pointed at officers. As he fled, the officer responded with deadly force. Here is the body cam footage. Play for me.
He's got a gun. He's got a gun on your right. On your right. He's got a gun.
The individual is running with a firearm in his hand. The officer is running, so the body camera is kind of jolting as the officer's running. What that leaves us with is a very blurred image, unfortunately. However, based on the officer's interviews, the officer who did discharge his firearm said that when the individual came out between the dumpsters, he had the firearm in front of him. He was in like a bladed position, and it was pointed at the officer. And he felt threatened for his life, and that's why he discharged his firearm. So that officer who fired was actually chasing a different suspect when he encountered the individual armed with a firearm. And again, total 6 seconds. So for them to process and determine a different course of action, I think is unreasonable.
So obviously you had body cam footage from at least two different officers right there. And just side by side that for me, would you, Aaron? The next one. Rodney Hinton, the man who later killed the deputy for vengeance sake, watched the video. What is there to think about here? But it doesn't matter because the officer who killed his son righteously is white. So it doesn't matter. Because he's been taught his entire life. I don't know how he has an 18-year-old is beyond me. He had to have him when he's like 15 or whatever it may be. Which, again, contributes to all of this. A vastly fatherless community is the black community. By the way, the white community is catching up quickly. But mostly fatherless community, probably had that child. And I wonder what his connection was, even was, to his son, Ryan, because obviously he did a spectacular job raising his son. Spectacular job, because his son is out committing armed carjackings. Great. I mean, I'm sure that he did a great job really being there for his son. But yet he goes and murders the deputy. He had absolutely nothing to do with the scene. He was standing there working a traffic box. That's all that he was doing, working a traffic box for some sort of gathering to be released out into the roads. So you saw the body cam footage. You saw the gun. It's indisputable. They found the gun. He had a gun. It's in his hand. It's on the video. And yet he still feels justified because the officer who righteously gunned down his son is white. And that's how the black community, not all of the black community, but that is how a large portion of the black community thinks these days. Where do I get that from? Let's go to the next one. Colin Rugg video. Social media users are praising the Cincinnati father. This little like music video set up as a tribute to Rodney Hinton. Play it for me.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like
so there you go. I mean, that's what's happened. By the way, of course, this embraces the same ideology as the Democratic Party, which celebrates the gunning down on the streets of New York of the insurance company CEO. They're all celebrating as if he's here. I mean, look at these. And this is just the beginning. All these white cops don't intimidate a man who's feeling. The world hate to see a black man protect his family. An eye for an eye will make the whole world blind. The black woman can't even look at him because she, whatever, that's right. Walk with your head held high. He kept his head up, looked them directly in their face. He a man with honor. A man who drives his car over a cop. He wasn't even involved in his son's righteous shooting. If your son commits a carjacking, which, by the way, you can bring it back to me. If your son commits a carjacking, the cops pull up. He runs. Okay, let's look at all the mistakes made here. First of all, he's carrying a concealed weapon. Felony number one. Felony number two, he commits a carjacking with a concealed illegal firearm. Felony number two and felony number three. The cops pull up and he runs. Misdemeanor number one, but then running with a firearm. Felony number four. Points it at the cops. Felony number five. That's just what we know. And you have the black community praising this guy? I mean, it's true. What would you think if this was, if your son or your daughter actually was that police officer, would you still be praising that? I mean, it's truly amazing the cognitive dissonance of people or the just pure purposeful ignorance. You just don't want to know the facts. How about the snowball effect? If you never commit the armed carjacking, and you never run from the cops with a gun in your hand. By the way, he could have left the gun in the car. Why didn't he? Because he's going to shoot other cops. That's why he's going to shoot at the cops. That's why. The reason why he kept the gun is just in case I've got to get out of this, I'm going to open fire. Could have left the gun in the car. He never would have been shot. Nobody else was. How many other people were shot in that, Aaron? None. Zero. There was four of them that ran. Yeah. How many of the rest of them were shot? None. You know why? Because none of the rest of them had a gun. I mean, again, and you see that. He held his head high. Held his head high as a murderous thug? As a coward? You know what? What do you mean? If you really wanted to, he could have found out who that cop was. He could have sued him. There'd be plenty of attorneys on the left that would gladly sue that cop. He could have done that. He could have gone and said, you know what? Cop, meet me in the back alley somewhere and let's just go. Let's just throw hands. That little worm. Look at his stupid little face. He's a little worm of a human being. He gets in his car after viewing that his son was righteously shot by numerous body cam angles. He gets in his car and feels justified in running down and murdering another cop who wasn't involved in the situation. I can go on and on. I'm not going to do it. All right, let's get to the Trump administration. All right, good stuff on Hegseth today. Eric Doherty video, SecDef, Secretary of Defense. Pete Hegseth is now slashing the number of four-star generals by 20%. Watch this. Play for me.
We're back with more DOD reforms. This one is General and Flag Officer Reductions. That's the official title. My title is Less Generals, More GIs. It's a historic one, and it's in keeping with President Trump's commitment to achieving peace through strength. We're going to shift resources from bloated headquarters elements to our warfighters. Let's take a bit of a trip down memory lane. In history, when we were fighting across the globe during World War II, we had a force that was 12 million strong. For that 12 million man element, we had 17 four and five star generals. Today, we have 2.1 million service members with 44 four star and flag officers. So it used to be a ratio of one general to 6,000 troops. Today, it's one general to 1,400. More generals and admirals does not equal more success. Now, this is not a slash and burn exercise meant to punish high ranking officers. Nothing could be further from the truth. This has been a deliberative process, working with the Joint Chiefs of Staff with one goal, maximizing strategic readiness and operational effectiveness by making prudent reductions in the general and flag officer ranks.
All right, let's dive deep now into this. So he's cutting four-star generals, which is basically that's what he's doing. And he named it Less Generals, More GIs. So he's cutting, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth is now slashing the number of four-star generals just by 20%. It's not very much. Needs to be by basically 100%. Almost 100% of them need to be fired, because here's the deal with it. What's happened now in the military is four-star generals are nothing more than NGO promotions. That's all they are. You're like, Tom, you're so captivated by the whole NGO thing. It is. It's all either real NGOs or symbolic NGOs inside of government agencies. That makes sense, Aaron?
Yeah.
That's really what it is. It's just a bunch of organizations set up to give globalist, leftist, bourgeois, elitist, Democratic Party members jobs. That's all that it is, for multi-millions of dollars. You're like, well, generals don't make millions of dollars. They make lots of money in the military and then make millions on the board of Raytheon when they leave, i.e. Lord Austin. So anyway, he says we got to get lean and mean. World War II, we had 12 million people in the military, 12 million soldiers in the military. We had 17 four-star generals for 12 million people. 17. For 12 million. Today, we have one-tenth of that. Today, we have 2.1 million. 2.1 million. And remember, with 12 million, we had 17 four- and five-star generals. Now, today, with only 2 million in the military, everyone thinks we can fight all these foreign wars, right? 2 million in the military, we have 44 four-star generals and flag officers. 44 of them. For 12 million, 17. For 2 million, 44. Because it is a little NGO inside of the military to give jobs to people like Lloyd Austin and Mark Milley and CENTCOM Commander McKenzie. All of these leftists. You ever noticed that they're all leftists? Everybody noticed that? Mad Dog Mattis. Remember that? Mad Dog Mattis, who's just a big liberal coward. Oh, I mean, they're all leftists. All pushing DEI. That's why they hate Hegseth. That's why Tom Cotton. Tom, he's a Republican. No, he's not. No, he's not. He's a leftist, globalist, bourgeois elitist married to one who pretends like he's a Republican, so you can't put a legitimate Republican in his seat. That's the way that it is in 99.9% of the senatorial and congressional seats in Washington, D.C., and many at the state level also, but I digress. That's if you ever noticed that they're all leftist. That's why Tom Cotton wanted Hegseth's job, so that he can get, he's looking for the next white rage Millie. He's looking for the next one. Looking for the next female DEI general that he can promote. The next lesbian DEI general or trans general that he can promote. Tom Cotton, if he was in charge of the military, if he was in charge of the Department of Defense, you'd have transgenderism right back in. But he says he's against it, and he's not. He's not. He's a fraud. He's an absolute fraud. No different than Romney, Collins, Graham, McConnell, or any of the rest of them. He talks a little better. That's all. That's all he did. That's what Signalgate was all about. Tom Cotton's former staff are the ones who made that happen. So that he, and that's why nobody talked about Mike Waltz, who's the one who actually orchestrated the call. Nobody talked about him at all, or his chief of staff, who his chief of staff used to be Cotton's chief of staff. Nobody talks about them at all. Everyone's going after Hegseth because Cotton wants Hegseth's job. And this is why he wants his job, because he doesn't want any of this to happen, because then he won't be able to give Democrats jobs. So you tell me a Republican wants to give Democrats jobs. He's not a Republican. You talk about Ryan being the epitome of Rhino. It's just a Republican in name only. So now you have during World War II, you had 1 4-star for every 6,000 soldiers. One. For every 6,000. Now you have 1 for every 1,400. With a military force that's a tenth the size of it was as it was in World War II. Why is that? So all they can give jobs to Democrats and subvert all Republican presidents, legit Republican presidents, which hasn't been a legit Republican president with the exception of Trump since Reagan. All the rest of them are just like Tom Cotton. The Bushes, you think they're legitimate? Absolutely not. I don't have time to get into that. Absolutely not. They're different. I mean, you're talking about the Bushes going back with Barry Satoru for many, many years, Barack Hussein Obama's father. I mean, Barry Satoru is Barack Obama's real name. But anyway, they go way back. It's all linked. It's all, it's all just a giant circle bleep symbiote, a party, as George Carlin says, that you and I are invited to. But anyway, so back in World War II, there was one 4-star general for every 6,000, now there's 1 for every 1,400. Why? Why would you need a 4-star general to command 1,400 people? I mean, you have school board officials who are in charge of way more people than that. Why would you need a 4-star to be in charge of 1,400 people? So that's all changed. Let's go to the next one. George video, November 14, 2024. Here's Senator Tuberville reveals the U.S. military has 44 four-star generals, each of them with a budget of $250 million each. Play for me.
And we did a big study in the Pentagon. Well, we got 44 four-star generals. Their budgets are $250 million each. $250 million. They have about 2,000 employees for each one of them. What the hell's going on here? We need to take all that money, shut down the Pentagon to about 3 sides instead of 5, and say, listen, let's build the best military in the world. Get away from this affirmative action. Get away from this woke nonsense, and let's build a killing machine. Because if we don't, they're coming at us from all sides. And Pete will do a hell of a job because he is not one of them.
I totally agree, and I hope your fellow senators agree. Pete will do that job as Secretary of Defense.
His last statement is the perfect summation. He is not one of them. So you have each of these 44 four-star generals with a fighting force of 2 million. We had 17 four-stars when we had a fighting force of 12 million. So I guess we feel like we need to triple the amount of four-stars as we lower the amount of fighting men and women by 90%. So quadruple the amount of 4-star generals while lowering the actual number of fighting men by 90%. How does that make sense? It doesn't. It's Washington, D.C. And it's why we're $37 trillion in debt and why $21 trillion is missing out of the Pentagon. Missing. Absolutely gone. Many are speculating now that it has been used to build a vast underground military operation under the United States and many other operations around the globe that do not benefit you and I. Do you have a key to any of those things? You're going to be able to run. You won't be able to run to those things. We won't be able to run underground. But you and I, we'll be out here, just left to whatever these globalists are doing. But they built their own underground system, potentially. But there's $21 trillion missing. $21 trillion, Aaron. $21 okay. trillion dollars missing out of the DOD, out of the Pentagon. There it is. Yeah, there we are. Again. Okay, so you have, leave that up. So you have 44 four-star generals, each of them receiving $250 million to govern 1,400 people. $250 million for 1,400 people? Well, I mean, what exactly are we doing? There's no way to justify this. Again, but you know what? If you get one of those, positions as a Democrat and as a Rhino Republican, numerous people can name, like Colin Powell and the rest of them, you just go out right back into the military industrial complex when you're done with your government. service, you go and you serve on the board of Lockheed Martin, and you for your consultancy fees and for your top secret clearance to secure government contracts, military industrial complex contracts, you know, you get paid $5 million, $6 million, $20 million, $30 million a year to sit on their boards because you have the inroads into the state and Department of Defense. That's what it is. And you have top secret security clearance. So you, it's very easy for you to secure these contracts. That's all they care about is personal enrichment, which again blows my mind. Because if all you're caring about is personal enrichment, as you bankrupt the country that's enriching you, then how do you think your riches will be worth anything? And I never get it. I mean, Aaron can't help me understand. Nobody can help me understand. I'll never understand how anybody wants to personally enrich themselves today. But in so doing, you bankrupt the country that's enriching you, therefore making your riches meaningless and worthless. I honestly do not get people. Right, let's go to the next one. Change the subject. Let's go to the border. Citizen Free Press video. Bill Clinton deported 12 million illegals. Did anybody remember any of the hearings that went on with those? 12? Because I easily remember the Clinton administration. I don't remember one. Oh, because 93% of those aliens were deported without a due process hearing. Play for me.
Talking roughly 20 million or so who broke the law, and there was no enforcement of the law from the Biden administration, which presented an even bigger issue because they were able to come here illegally without any issues at all. Bill Clinton deported 12.1 million during his presidency. 92 to 93% of those people he deported were sent back without a formal proceeding, aka due process. Okay, so look to what President Trump said. 5 million trials. That's impossible. You can't do it. And the fact that these judges continue to get in the way and try to derail his deportation efforts, it's brutal because, you know, to Caroline's points earlier, the Manhattan Institute estimates an average net fiscal burden of $68,000 per illegal migrant, which actually goes up to $130,000 for those with lower education levels. That is a big drain on society. And one of the things that President Trump has mentioned is for these people who self-deport, they have an opportunity to come back the right way at some point in the future.
So you actually see numbers from Democratic Party administrations, 12 million. Donald Trump has like thrown out a couple hundred thousand so far. 12 million in 8 years built from Billy Clinton. So with none of them receiving due process, and by the way, Chuck Schumer was a senator then. Nancy Pelosi was a congresswoman then, and they never complained one time. So it must just have to do with an R or a D. That's it. An R or D. And also now things have changed where everybody on the left is seeing the benefits of importing massive amounts of illegals out of third world countries, because then when you bring them into the first world country, as you hear all the time on this podcast, they have no heritage connection to the Constitution, to the Charter of Rights, whatever it is that your country calls it. So they have no heritage connection to it. But using our country as an example, you import 20 million people as Biden did. And you have Democrats fighting to bring them back now once they're deported. You import 20 million illegals into this country who have no heritage connection to the Bill of Rights, the Constitution. They are very easily governed out of London, out of Davos, out of the EU, out of Beijing. Very easily governed because they have no heritage connection. They have no connection to what their rights are. So when they tell you to mask, you mask. When they tell you to call a girl a guy and a guy a girl, you do it. When they tell you to kill yourself, you do it. When they tell you to abort your child, you do it. That's the point of all of it, is control. I mean, all coming down to what you hear all the time in this podcast, leveraging you into a one-world commerce system with a single access point controlled by them. Speaking of illegals, let's go to this Rep. Jim Jordan video. How many illegals do you think are part of our federal prison system? Play it for me.
Mr. Pertel, any idea how many inmates in federal prison are not U.S. citizens?
I actually do not know that, sir. I'm sorry.
Mr. Potter, do you have hazard a guess or no?
I do not know.
Mr. Wild?
I do not know.
Mr. Milton?
No, sir.
Well, I think you all testified there are staff shortages. The gentleman from New York just talked about staff shortages. Maybe if there weren't 24,000 federal inmates who are not U.S. citizens, maybe we wouldn't have a staff shortage. Maybe if the administration before this one hadn't just released into the country people who came here illegally and actually detained them, they wouldn't have committed some of these crimes and wouldn't be in federal prison. You think maybe that would help with the situation on staffing that you all brought up that the gentleman from New York just raised? Mr. Petrell, I'll start with you.
So there you go. I want to write this down real quick because I watched the whole video. How much of, there's 24,000. I mean, did everyone get the scope of this? That's just the federal system. That's not the state system. I mean, you live in a big state like Florida. We got like 23 million people live here. Texas, 40 million. California, 40 million, roughly. Texas, slightly larger than California's population. That's not the state penitentiary system. This is just federal. Just federal. Which in some ways is small, way smaller than all of the state penitentiaries, obviously, cumulatively together. And smaller probably than big state penitentiary systems. So that's just talking about people in federal custody. I just want to make sure that everybody understands the numbers, the parameters of what Jim Jordan's talking about. But just using the federal system, you have 24,000, and it's actually 24,600 and something. So 24,600 illegals in the federal system, and they have a staffing shortage. They have a correction officer shortage in the federal system. Well, maybe you wouldn't have it if you weren't storing 24,000 illegals. That means they committed crimes. Once they were let into the country, they are not their crimes they committed in their home countries. These are the crimes they committed inside the United States. So as Jim Jordan said, maybe if they weren't let in, we wouldn't have 24,000 of them in our federal system that were probably paying somewhere between $100,000 and $300,000 a year to house per. So if you simply don't let them in, you're not going to pay hundreds of billions of dollars over their lifetimes, hundreds of billions. Now I'm spreading that out countrywide, including state systems, hundreds of billions of dollars during their lifetimes. You wouldn't have to spend any of that. We already spend when under the Biden administration, I think it was $62 billion a year just on the border alone, dealing with illegals, buying their baby formula, carting them all over the place. But you had CBP officers saying, you know what? All I feel like I am now, I'm a trained law enforcement officer. I'm allowed to use deadly force. I should be investigating crimes. I should be stopping the illegal border invasion. I should be doing all things. Instead, I'm an Uber driver. That's what they were saying. Numerous CBP officers testified to that. But maybe if you don't have this 24,600 illegals in our system, none of those people should have ever been in the country because they committed their subsequent felony to enter the country. Then they committed a subsequent felony or felonies, rape, robbery, murder, and are now in the federal system. That none of those crimes, none of the subsequent crimes would have ever happened if they weren't allowed in the country to begin with. And that 24,000 is 16%. Of our federal population. Almost 20% of our federal inmate population is illegals that you and I pay for every year. And Aaron can, anytime he wants, put the debt clock back up. That shows you why it is that we are $37 trillion in debt. There it is. I mean, think about it. 24,000, this is just the federal system. By the way, all your money goes to the state system too to pay for the illegals that are housed in the state system. Here we are. None of which you and I ever benefit from this. Only people, and again, here it comes, the only people that benefit from this are the NGOs that allegedly, quote unquote, help the illegal population. All right, let's go to the next one. RNC research video. It is a very short video, 10 seconds maybe. Watch NYPD chief say they are unable to enforce civil deportations due to the restrictions of being a sanctuary city. Play it for me.
Our sanctuary city laws are there. We cannot enforce civil enforcement. We can't. We work with our federal partners every day for criminal investigations, and when that takes place, that can take its course. But as far as the civil deportation, we are not allowed by law. We cannot. Under no circumstances are we allowed.
So that person has committed a felony entering the country, and local law enforcement in the largest city in the United States of America cannot detain them. Because Letitia James, the various mayors, de Blasio, Eric Adams, all of them, the sanctuary city, they've actually written in their statutes, which, by the way, is treason. I mean, it really is. I mean, we need to be dealing with these things as they are. See, in the state of Florida, and this is the same thing when it goes from state to federal, here in Florida, you have a state law. Let's just say state law. Now, you are allowed to enhance that law. Like if you go, the state law is, you know, the example that I always use is no glass bottles on the beach. Okay. Now, that's all local ordinance stuff, but I'm just using it as an example. You as a local jurisdiction can enhance the law and say no glass bottles on the beach and the beach parking lot. Make sense, Aaron, so
yep,
far?
Yep.
You're allowed to enhance it. What you can't do is go, on our beaches, you can do whatever you want.
Yep.
See, you can't take from it, but you can add to it. The same thing federally. You can't take away from the law. You can't subtract from the law. You can't denigrate the law. That's a federal law. Those people have committed crimes. And when you find out that they are a wanton felon, because they've illegally entered the country, you need to detain them for ICE. And if ICE fails to pick them up, then that's the Fed's problem, and then you can release them. But it's your job as a law enforcement officer to detain that illegal. And then it gets, of course, way worse than that, because we've cited examples on this podcast. Many other podcasts have cited the same examples of illegals that were caught raping children. And then ICE finds out about it. They're like, holy crap, you know, we should have probably picked that guy up long before he actually raped children. But now it's too late. So we're going to put a detainer on him. And Mayor Wu out of Boston just lets them loose. After they've raped a kid, they just let them loose because they don't honor the ICE detainer. So not only are they not enhancing the law, you don't have to enhance it. Not only are you not enhancing it, not only are you not enforcing it, you're actually sabotaging the law, which makes you a treasonous felon yourself. So you're sitting there as a jurisdiction saying, we're not going to enforce federal law about immigration. So, I mean, and again, where's the line then? See, Democrats always want to have a moving goalpost, and then whenever a situation strikes, they just put out whatever proclamation benefits them. Well, we felt like this about the law. We felt that's not how the law works, how you feel about it. That's not how it works. You follow the law. And if you don't, you're a felon in and of yourself. We're seeing it now. Judges are being arrested. They should have been arrested. You should have been. If you're gonna interrupt your own domestic battery hearing and say, I would like to call the defendant and the defense attorney into my chambers as part of the proceeding and then let them out a back door to evade ICE, you're a freaking felon. And that woman needs to spend 10 years in prison for what she's done. And not only that, she let a domestic abuser back on the streets, and domestic abusers are never let back on the streets without an injunction for protection for the victim, which she was perfectly fine doing. I mean, I get into this law enforcement stuff. I could spend all night on it, but I'm not going to do that to you. All right, let's go to the next one. Real Robert video. The greatest money laundering operation on the planet in human history. Turns out the Paris Accords, remember all that? That's climate change stuff that Donald Trump gets us out of every time. He got us out of it. Biden put us back in. Donald Trump immediately on day one got us out of the Paris Accords, which is basically you and I have to monitor all of our CO2 emissions. But the greatest emitters of CO2, which, by the way, I don't care whether you emit CO2 or not, because that's all a fraudulent assertion that it does any damage to the planet. But anyway, the greatest emitters of CO2, China, give it to me, Aaron.
China.
And India don't have any controls whatsoever. No regulations whatsoever. And even when they do, they don't obey them. So when you have India, it has a little over a billion people. And China with 1.4 billion people. And they're building one coal fire plant after another. And they're all part of the climate accords. Because really what it is China partnering with the globalist leftist bourgeois elitist to defang America. But I don't have time to get into that big view right now. But anyway, so John Podesta, turns out the Paris Accords is right here on American soil. John Podesta, get this, Aaron. Johnny, Aaron, maybe you can find some of those pictures of Johnny, Johnny P's home.
Yeah.
John Podesta is overseeing $375 billion climate slush fund. Did everybody know that? Side by side that. This little worm, so you know, make sure you know I'm talking. Johnny Podesta, big Clinton acolyte, Biden acolyte, leftist bourgeois elitist acolyte, globalist acolyte. $375 billion given to him by who? You, me, Joe, Aaron. He is filthy, rotten rich from looting taxpayer funds. billions of which are being laundered to foreign and domestic terrorist organizations disguised as charities with no federal filings and zero public accountability. Here's Johnny P. for just a couple seconds. Play it for me.
As Kareen noted, we're marking the one-year anniversary of a truly transformative piece of legislation, the Inflation Reduction Act, which is the largest investment in clean energy and climate action ever in the United States, in the history of the world. But first, I want to acknowledge that today's event is coming during a time of heartbreak as the toll of extreme weather fueled by climate change is being felt across the country and the world. This summer has brought one climate disaster after another, from extreme heat in Arizona and Texas and across the southeast to floods in Vermont and upstate New York to thick smoke from Canadian wildfires. And all of us have watched.
So the Canadian wildfires that was found, we all know how those started. They started from a climate activist. Just so you know, there's Johnny Podesta's art that was found in his home. I mean, who in the world has a giant portrait of kids in their underwear with their legs spread? Anybody? You know, how about a kid tied up in a shower? How about a collage of it all? How about kids? How about ever having a picture at all of kids with their hands tied behind their backs? Who has any of that? Oh, but Pizzagate's all just, it's all, you know, hyperbolic. Pizzagate never happened. Oh, really? So this is the guy that's in charge. And then he starts saying, you know, we're already seeing the effects of climate change. It's hot in Texas this summer. That's what, I mean, it's so funny that people would ever listen to these people. Yeah, you can just flow right through them, Aaron. Who has that in their house? This guy has a $375 billion slush fund that he sits on, all for climate change. You think any of it goes to climate change? Who has this kind of art in their house? This is an absolute fact. He doesn't deny it. It's just a shower. You see the little drains on the bottom? Who has this? You know who has it? Pedophiles. That's who has it. And this guy has a $375 billion slush fund that he sits on. Because it's hot in Texas and there's wildfires in Canada that were set by climate activists. All of them are. All right, let's get those off of there. I can't take a look at them. Thank you, Aaron. Did a great job. Podesta Accords extorted 20. He was given $20 billion right as Biden left office. $20 billion. For what? How do these people get rich? Oh, these people are. We just accept, oh, this person's a multimillionaire. This person's a multibillionaire. Yeah, they're multibillionaires because you and I have given them money via NGOs. Like this. He's running an NGO. That's what he's doing. That's all it's about. Is anybody actually legitimately rich? Warren Buffett's only rich because the government bailed him out.
Yep.
Podesta Accords extorted $7 billion for a Maryland climate group that doesn't even appear in the IRS database. That's weird. So they got $7 billion from a Maryland climate group that doesn't exist according to the IRS? How is it now, if you and I suddenly got $7 billion, we would be getting a full rectal proctological exam from the IRS. But Johnny P. gets nothing. Because Johnny P. has inroads into the federal government, or at least he used to. He needs to go to federal prison for the rest of his freaking miserable, child-abusing life. Podesta Accords extorted $2 billion. That's the Stacey Abrams money. $20 billion given to Johnny P., and then Stacey Abrams gets $2 billion to go inspect refrigerators. How does she become broke, owing thousands of dollars, to now worth over $2 million, and probably worth way more than that? It's all a giant game. $375 billion of your dollars were given to John Podesta. Again, if we actually looked at this organization, we'll just call it Podesta Org. If we actually looked at Podesta Org, he's given $375 billion so that he can go and stop climate change, just like Al Gore. Al Gore does it the same thing, exact same way, starts an NGO, contributes to his own NGO, makes millions of dollars as the CEO of the NGO, pays himself, all sorts of extras for being the CEO, gives himself all sorts of bonus. You know, I deem that I did a great job this year. $20 million bonus. And he gets Al Gore, Podesta get our billions of dollars for their allegedly unbiased, neutral, apolitical NGOs. This is why we're $37 trillion in debt. It's not even, listen, I would love to blame it on entitlements, but you can't. $21 trillion of it's missing out of the Pentagon alone, out of the 37. I mean, it's not. Listen, there's a lot of fraud in Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. A ton. Elon has revealed it. But that's not where all the money's gone. It's gone to Democratic Party NGOs to enrich Democrats and globalists around the globe with your money. Nobody else has that. Britain doesn't have the NGO problem. We do. Japan doesn't have it. We do. Canada doesn't have it. They have a lot of their own problems, but they don't have an NGO problem like we do. We have our own politicians and those connected with politicians, and like Johnny Podesta's never actually held a political office like congressman or senator or anything like that, but he's always on their staffs. Now he's worth $375 billion, pays himself. So he gets his $375 billion because he's supposed to give all of that away to stop the heinous crime of climate change. But instead, none of it actually goes to that, and the billions go to himself. The example that I've given 5 out of the last 6 podcasts is they give you $60 billion for a climate change organization or whatever it may be. We'll make it easier than that. They give you a $60 billion slush fund to feed the hungry. So you hire all Democrats. You hire thousands of Democrats to disperse this $60 billion that they've given you. Well, you pay yourself $59 billion to your staff and to various other Democratic Party entities. You're hiring lawyers. You're having speech engagements. You're bringing in all kinds of guest speakers. You're booking all sorts of flights and trips and everything else to go give speeches and to spread your message. So out of the $60 billion, you spent $59.9 billion to give away a billion. That's how they all work. Just simplistically, they give you $1 million that you're supposed to disperse to the poor. And you spend $990,000 paying yourself, so $100,000 goes to the poor. That's exactly what the Clintons did in Haiti. That's exactly what the Bidens did in Iraq with Frank or James Biden building houses in Iraq. Remember, they're supposed to build all these residential communities in Haiti, and they built like 4 houses. And they had like, you know, $500 million to build thousands of houses. And they built 4 houses and kept the rest. That's what they do, $500 million to build houses. They paid themselves $490 million and built $10 million worth of houses. Yes, James Biden in Iraq, Aaron just told me. Let's go to the next one. Wall Street Apes video. It's money laundering. So it turns out 7,000 politically connected NGOs, 7,000 NGOs. You know, maybe Tom's right. Maybe that's all that the United States is about. It is, except for Donald Trump. That's it. Elon Musk and Donald Trump want to get rid of them, but that's exactly why we're $37 trillion in debt. It's not the military. It's not the Iraq war. It's not the Afghanistan war. I hate both those wars. We never should have been in either one of them, but that's not the problem. This is the problem. 7,000 NGOs are receiving 90% of all taxpayer money going to nonprofits. First of all, why are we sending any money to nonprofits as a government entity? What should be funding nonprofits? You and I and our charity. That's it. Why is the government supporting nonprofits? Why, Aaron? Why do you think? Well, I don't even let him answer. I just pretend like I'm talking to somebody else. Why is it that the government's sending it to quote unquote nonprofits? Because yes, they're nonprofits, but they're just like Johnny Podesta. They receive, this again, just using easy numbers, they receive $10 billion as a nonprofit that pays an entirely Democratic Party staff $9 billion of the $10 billion they're supposed to disperse. Enriching themselves and hiring other Democrats, hiring Democratic Party lawyers, hiring Democratic Party speakers, and contributing to Democratic Party campaigns. It's all that it is. You and I are paying so J.B. Pritzker can be a billionaire. 7,000 politically connected NGOs are receiving all, basically 90% of all taxpayer money going to nonprofits. Listen to this lady. Play for me.
So it turns out 7,000 politically connected NGOs are receiving 90% of all taxpayer money going to nonprofits. Roughly $300 billion in government money flows through nonprofits every year with zero transparency with regard to where that money goes. The American people deserve access to the books of any entity that takes government money and all information about how that money is used and the communications around it need to be considered public record. That's our money. and these NGOs need to start answering to us.
How the NGOs should answer us is there is no reason why you can't immediately defund an NGO. They may struggle with defunding government agencies because they're being sued, but you can't, like the USAID, like, you know, with Jeb Boasberg and all that, the judge out of DC, which I'm going to get to that in just a second. But you should easily be able to defund an NGO. But of course, they are struggling. Donald Trump has 200 plus lawsuits filed against them right now, against his administration, as Democrats want to continue adding on $1 million worth of debt every 19 to 21 seconds. That's what Democrats want to do. Because when they do, they personally get rich. But again, how great is it to be rich when your source of that wealth is bankrupt, therefore making your wealth meaningless and worthless? Because if we continue down the track that we are, the wealth that all of these Democrats are getting via that track will bankrupt the tract and make all of their money worthless. I don't get these people. Honestly don't. Let's go to this one. Trump War Room video. At Secretary Scott Best, the Treasury Secretary, at Treasury, of the 1.5 billion payments, why are we making 1.5 billion payments every year? Because of these NGOs. They're required to have something called a TAS, Treasury Account Symbol. We discovered one third of all of those payments, 1.5 billion of them, didn't have a TAS tracking number on them. So they have no idea where 33% of the 1.5 billion payments are going and no receipts required. Play it for me.
Can you define for the committee today what an improper payment is and some examples of what you're seeing and why these procedures were not already in place before, Mr. Secretary?
Well, it's a bit mystifying why they weren't in place. And what we are seeing is that there was a very complacent upper level of management in many departments across the entire government. What I can say at Treasury, that of the 1.5 billion payments we send out every year, they're required to have something called a TAS, a Treasury Account Symbol. We discovered that more than one third of those payments did not have a TAS number. So as the Appropriations Committee, you should be shocked by that, because how can a payment be tracked back to an appropriation? Only through the TAS number. So there was no accountability. So that is why the 450 organizations that sit above Treasury, where Treasury acts as the paymaster, are unable to pass an audit. So we have the crackdown on that. Every payment now requires a TAS number. Very simple. And I will tell you that the mid-level employees who I have had come into Treasury to talk to me about that feel liberated. That they have, you know, they tell me, I've been here 20 years. I've always wanted to do this. I've been here 14 years. And they feel as though they now have agency and are making a difference towards saving the American taxpayer money.
So see, again, who on earth could get away with this? If you did this as a multinational conglomerate company, you are a company worth billions, Ford, Chevrolet, Apple, whatever you may be, you can't do this. You have to prove how you spent your money. But the government who forces you into accountability has none themselves. That's why the IRS, I can't remember what the number is. It's tens of millions that are owed by IRS agents in taxes themselves. So you have IRS agents putting people in federal prison for tax evasion, that they themselves are evading their taxes. And here you have the government who holds you accountable to make sure you trace every dime, because you're going to have to pay your taxes on it. They themselves don't track 33% of the 1.5 billion payments they make per year. So they say, you know, $300 million has been paid out. To where? It really is like this. It could be literally trillions. We have $6.8 trillion is our budget, even though we only bring in $4 to $5 trillion worth of tax revenue every year. Aaron sent me this. 2024 audit revealed that over 5,800 IRS employees and contractors owed nearly $50 million in overdue taxes. But yet they're putting people in federal prison for not paying their taxes. And we have the exact same thing going on here. They write a check for $500 million. Where'd it go? We have no idea. They don't know where it went. They don't require any receipts. There's no tracking. This is no wonder we covered it from last night out of the Department of Education, where a woman in the Department of Education, which has exact same account, they all use one account from the Treasury, that $1.5 billion payments per year. Well, I'll tell you where, I'm trying to remember exactly how many she did. 60 payments. Well, I can tell you where 60 of the non-track payments went to. They went to the Department of Education employee who paid herself $650,000 along with three of her friends. She wrote checks to herself. Because there's no task number, the Treasury account symbol attached to it. Nothing. So they write a check for $100 million. Where did it go? We don't know. Can you prove that anybody received it? No. Is there a receipt? No. So basically, they could be writing a check to Al-Qaeda. Nobody would know.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, they're doing.
I was going to say.
We've already seen it.
Yeah.
They can write it because they write checks to USAID. USAID sends it to Al-Qaeda. I need to bring that list, and I keep forgetting to bring it in, but I had to bring it in because that's one of my favorite things to do is read lists. All right, let's go to the next one. Riff TV tweet. SCOTUS backs Trump's trans-military crackdown. 6-3 votes. So we got all the conservatives voted that Trump is allowed. Get this, Aaron. Get this, Joe. Trump is allowed to keep transgenders out of the military. Thank you, Supreme Court. Which, by the way, I thought it was three co-equal branches, not branches that governed each other. I thought it was co-equal. How is it that the Supreme Court is now more powerful than the executive and legislative? How is the judiciary branch is now more powerful than the executive and the legislative? No, what they're allowed to do is rule on what's been passed. They can't pass law. They rule on what's been passed. They don't get to do any of this. You're like, well, they are making rules. No, what is it? How is this a law? How is it a law? It's not a law. It's got nothing to do with law. Donald Trump says, you know, anybody can do this. When you're in charge, you're allowed to decide what comes in and out of your house. If your requirement is that everybody that comes into your house has to wear a Make America Great Again red Trump hat, then you can. And you can say, you know what? Anybody who doesn't, you're not allowed in. And you can trespass people, so they're not allowed on your property. Those are the rights that you have. Same thing when you're running the administrative branch. He can't deem murder to be legal. That goes into the SCOTUS. But he can say transgenders aren't allowed to serve in the military. It's got nothing to do with them. And what advantage is it to our killing machine for a bunch of men with taped up penises to serve? I mean, what advantage is it to the military to have a bunch of women with sewed on phallic symbols that fall off and rot like a dead raccoon on the side of the road? What advantage is it to our military to have sewed on phallic symbols and taped up penises? Anybody explain that to me? And then you have a little symbol on the bottom there if you blow the picture up where you have a guy pretending to be a girl or a girl pretending to be a guy, whatever it is. I don't even care anymore. All right, let's go to the next one. X22 report. Stephen Miller's America First Legal. I didn't even know Stephen Miller started America First, but it makes sense. Awesome. These are the kind of institutions we need to, you know, go have fun at Trump rallies and stuff. There's no feds there, but I'm just saying, the protesting, all that's useless. You just get Fed infiltration. They instigate the crowd, and somebody ends up committing a crime because they're instigated by the Federal Bureau of Instigation to do so. These are the organizations that we need to send our money to. Places like America First Legal, Judicial Watch, Liberty Council, places like that that actually put Democrats under oath. That's what needs to happen. This is a little lengthy. I hope everybody's okay with it. A little wonky here. But anyway, Stephen Miller's America First Legal has filed a lawsuit against Chief Justice John Roberts. It's beginning. Now, when I first heard this, I'm like, oh, this is just a tactic by the Trump administration to leverage power away from the Supreme Court. It's not. It's actually way deeper than that. I hope this isn't too wonky for you, but I've got to tell you how it works. So this is from the Gateway Pundit. Stephen Miller's America First Legal has filed a bombshell lawsuit against Chief Justice John Roberts personally in his capacity as presiding officer. Wait a minute. He's not suing him as Chief Justice. They're suing him in his capacity as presiding officer of the Judicial Conference of the United States and Robert J. Conrad, director of administrative of the administrative office of the U.S. courts. They're suing John Roberts and Robert Conrad. You're like, what are you talking about? Are you like me? Aaron, have you ever heard of the conference of the Judicial Conference of the United States?
I have not.
I have not either.
No.
Or the administrative office of the U.S. courts?
Nope.
No, me neither.
Nope.
So that's who's being sued. See, you're dealing with, okay, listen. When you're dealing with people like Elon Musk and Stephen Miller, you better freaking watch out. Okay, these people are absolute high triple digit IQ people, all right? The lawsuit, so he's not suing John Roberts as the Supreme Court Chief Justice. He's suing him in his capacity as presiding officer of the Judicial Conference of the United States, which none of us have ever heard of. The lawsuit accuses the powerful duo, John Roberts and Robert Conrad, of running what AFL, America First Legal, describes as an unconstitutional shadow agency and violating federal transparency laws. The lawsuit filed on April 22nd slams the Judicial Conference and of the United States and its administrative arm, both overseen by Chief Justice John Roberts, as rogue executive agencies that have collaborated with far-left lawmakers to wage lawful lawfare against conservative Supreme Court justices. I'm going to let this speak for itself, but these two agencies, which, by the way, get this, Aaron, get this, Joe, these two agencies, I'm going to put this right here so I have it, the Judicial Conference of the United States, and I told you this is really wonky, and the Administrative Office of the U.S. courts are solely under the executive branch. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
These two agencies are controlled by Donald J. Trump only. They're not under the Supreme Court. But John Roberts and Robert Conrad have used these two agencies controlled by the executive to persecute Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito. And maybe even Brett Kavanaugh. Wait a minute. They're all part of the same party. You honestly believe that Norm Eisen's best friend, John Roberts, remember John Roberts spent like a week over in Norm Eisen's castle in the Czech Republic talking about instituting various democratic law in the EU?
That's right.
Yeah. Who knows what's going on in that castle?
We know.
America First Legal argues that these entities must comply with FOIA. They have to. Supreme Court doesn't. These two agencies have to, and they've refused to cooperate with the Freedom of Information Act. AFL argues that these entities must comply with FOIA because they exercise executive powers, including responding to congressional oversight and issuing binding resolutions, all under the direction of Roberts himself. He's conducting, get this now, executive powers, including responding to congressional oversight and issuing binding regulations under Donald Trump's authority. He is actually sabotaging Republicans while he works for Donald Trump. This is separate from being Supreme Court Justice from being the Chief Justice. For several years, the media and enterprising lawmakers have launched an onslaught to destroy the impartiality and political neutrality of Article III courts, and particularly the Supreme Court Justice Thomas, Alito, and Kavanaugh, have all faced political and physical threats. Was it John Roberts that orchestrated Christine Blasey Ford? Was it?
Mm.
See, we all think they got an R in front of their name, that they're on our side. I know that those of you that are red pill don't think that, but they're the most dangerous of all, the fake R's. The Mitt Romneys, the John Roberts, the Tom Cottons. They're the fake. They're fake. They're infiltrators. They're saboteurs. All face political and physical threats because of the politicalization and weaponization of the law. This lawfare has been led by Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, who is a Democrat who's working with John Roberts, and Representative Hank Johnson. That what island was it that he thought could
Guam.
Overturn? Guam. That Hank Johnson thought Guam could overturn if we put too many buildings on Guam, that he was afraid it would overturn. Remember that? If we put an American military base and too many tanks on Guam, that it was going to overturn?
I'm afraid it might capsize.
That's exactly what it sounded like, exactly what he said. Hank Johnson, relying upon ideologically favorable legacy media to falsely accuse Justice Thomas and Alito of ethical improprieties. Their aim was simple, to chill the judicial independence of the Supreme Court justice. According to the explosive complaint, the judicial conference run by John Roberts and the administrative office, I got to quit, keep these names out, run by Robert J. Conrad of the U.S. courts, long presumed exempt from the Freedom of Information Act, have functioned more like executive agencies rather than neutral arms of the judiciary. AFL's America First Legal lawsuit stems from its FOIA request for communications between these agencies, which they're under the executive. They have to relinquish their communications from one to another. They don't have to relinquish communication between John Roberts and Brett Kavanaugh as justices, but in his capacity here, he does. But he's using the auspices of his title under the SCOTUS to not do so. See, these people don't follow the law, and he's the Supreme Court justice. He is the chief justice of the Supreme Court and doesn't follow the law. Just like the IRS agents who owe $50 million don't follow the law. AFL's lawsuit stems from its FOIA request for communications between these agencies and White House and Johnson, two of the most vocal Democrat crusaders against conservative justices. After the agencies flatly denied the request, claiming FOIA doesn't apply to them, AFL took them to court. That's good on that. I mean, I just want you to see what's happening with this. I just want you to see, because it's way different than, hey, you know what? Stephen Miller's AFL is suing John Roberts. It's way, way different than that. All right, 1017, that's good. Oh, wow, lots of Rumble Rants tonight. Gucci Buckeye, $20. Nate Dad, $1, $20. Robin Aroni, $20. Peace Us, $10. Patty K44, $5. Love you guys in the rant. Love you guys in the chat. Thank you so much. Back here tomorrow night, 9 o'clock. God bless you.
Thank you for watching the Tom Lively podcast. We appreciate your support. As a special thank you, when you donate $25 or more, you'll receive a free TLP mug. Sip your favorite beverage while enjoying all the insights from our episodes. Your support helps us keep bringing you current events from around the globe. Donate now to claim your mug.